I pray that I and all sentient beings from this life through all future lives will ever be able to hear the true teachings. Once I have heard the true Dharma, I will not harbor doubts about it or fail to trust in it. Right at the time when I encounter the true Dharma, I will let go of the whole world and embrace the Buddha's teachings. Then, together with all beings on this great earth, may we fulfill the way.
As we continue on in our study of the third of Samantabhadra's great vows, making great offerings to all the Buddhas, we'll be talking today about giving something more than just material offerings. There is an very interesting episode in the life of the Buddha which concerns the conversion of Yasa. Yasa was a young man who, in the flush and surging of youth, was deeply devoted to hedonism. And in particular, Yasa was very fond of young women. And as was the custom of the day, Yasa could have his cake and eat it too by having a young and beautiful wife and also as many young and beautiful concubines as he could stand. And it would appear from the stories that Yasa could stand a lot of them. So for some time, he ardently pursued the objects of his desire and devoted himself deeply to sampling their charms as often as he could. And as we know, and as human experience would tell us, that one who so actively pursues sensual desires eventually is going to become somewhat tired of them. And the story goes that Yasa awoke one night and was overcome by a vision in which he could see everyone who was in the room and lying about him after having quite a good time that evening, just like corpses that were in a cemetery. And he was so overcome with sadness and with disgust at himself that he lost his mind. And he wandered out of the house and started wandering around in the jungle, mumbling over and over to himself, "I am surrounded by trouble. Everything around me is in confusion." It just so happened, to Yasa's great advantage, that in wandering around the jungle that evening, he wandered into a clearing where the Buddha was sitting there meditating. And of course, the Buddha had sensed him coming and could hear him mumbling his mantra of confusion over and over again. And as Yasa walked into the clearing and stopped, very surprised by the sight of a monk who was sitting there very, very quietly, the Buddha looked at him and said, "Yasa, here there is no trouble. Here there is no confusion." Which, of course, in the receptive state that Yasa was in, appealed to him very much. And Yasa began to ask the Buddha the meaning of what he meant, and the Buddha introduced him to the teaching of the Buddha Dharma. And as the story goes, Yasa converted and later became a monk and an arahant. the great offering which Samantabhadra makes, and which the vows of Samantabhadra are teaching us to make, the same offering that the Buddha made to Yasa, is the offering of fearlessness. Fearlessness is more than courage, but it is the relinquishment of fear and desire that comes about quite naturally from having deep roots in meditation and deep faith and confidence in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Because of this deep refuge, because we find what we are looking for when we meditate and keep to the teachings, because we are able to find faith and confidence, we're able to let go of fear and desire. And it is in this way that we learn to become fearless. This is the great offering that the Buddhas make to us. And this is also the great offering that we make to each other in our everyday life of training. Now, if you remember, a couple of weeks ago, I talked to you about faith in terms of faith being confidence. Confidence in the practice, confidence in training, confidence in your meditation, confidence in the teachings. And remember what I said was the placing, confidence meaning the placing of faith or entrustment. Trust in the sense of what is right according to the teachings of the Buddha. Faith and trust function to clarify and to build confidence. And this creates fearlessness. This is fearlessness. Faith and trust function as that which causes a muddy stream to become clear, and as that which causes one to set forth as if one were going to cross dangerous floodwaters. Yes, the muddy stream that becomes clear is the stream of our own greed, hate, and delusion. And the dangerous storm waters that we are going to cross are the dangerous waters of birth and death that we are attempting to cross to get to the other shore. Faith and trust bring clarity and lack of confusion or fogginess caused by greed, hate, and delusion. One of the bywords of my novitiate here and early training was the term the fog. So-and-so is in a fog. And there was more to being in a fog than just being a little absent-minded, but that the fog was created by this generation of greed, hate, and delusion, or the muddy waters of the mind all stirred up, which one had to learn how to still in order to find stillness itself and clarity, faith, confidence, fearlessness. So this courage and resolution, which comes from our own efforts in training, our own efforts to clarify the nature of our minds, to cleanse ourselves from greed, hatred, and delusion, to dispel the fog, is fearlessness. It rescues us from suffering, and it is that which we can confidently offer to others when they are in tragedy, in fear, in distress, and in suffering. Don't look for something flashy or dramatic when you think of this kind of fearlessness. Think back to the story I told you from the episode of Yasa. The Buddha was sitting there very clearly, very quietly, and this man who was being driven mad by the karmic consequence of his own desires bursts into this clearing. And the Buddha looked at him and said, "Yasa, here there is no confusion. No. There is no trouble. There is no fear." This was the Buddha offering Yasa the opportunity to know the fearlessness that comes from growing deep and strong roots in the practice of the Dharma and in the practice of meditation. There is a very interesting piece in the scripture of Brahma's net, which we recite here once every fortnight, and we'll actually be reciting the whole of in a week's time, where Vairochana Buddha has been expounding to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and Shakyamunis what he calls the foundations of training. And these are the 10 decisions, the 10 nourishing attitudes, the 10 commitments, and the 10 stages of the training of Bodhisattvas. And if you read the sutra, you realize that this is something that is very big. It is very deep. And the question will understandably arise in the mind, oh my gosh, you know, if this is the teaching of Vairochana Buddha to the 10 billion Shakyamunis who've already realized enlightenment, how am I supposed to, you know, practice the teaching here? That's a very tall order. There's something interesting that appears. And the scripture, this section of the scripture goes, "At this time, as Vairochana sat upon his jeweled lotus blossom, all were filled with great joy as he gave them the prophecy of their ultimate realization of Buddhahood whilst transmitting the truth to them. Alike in their views and understandings, the bodhisattvas, with differing voices but in one accord, were unequaled in their praise of Vairochana. All at once, all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas within the hundreds of millions of universes gathered about him like thick clouds. They asked him to turn the indescribable wheel of the Dharma and open the gate to the Dharma which leads and guides from within the treasure house, which encompasses all like space. At this stage, Vairochana had inexpressibly rare and wondrous types of gates to the Dharma for them, including the gate to the Dharanis and the gate to the Samadhi of the three incomparable insights." And then he says, then the scripture says, the most important thing. "Those who were on the lower bodhisattvic stages, okay, who had entered into the bodhisattva paths, but were on the lower aspect of them, or were ordinary everyday people, me and you, did not yet know about all these teachings. For only the immeasurable bodies, speech, and minds of the Buddhas are capable of fully exploring this treasure house to its foundations. As is said within the various heavens of light and sound, the 10 forms of fearlessness and the way of the Buddhas are identical. So, those of us who are in, who have not yet reached the level of Buddha or Bodhisattva, and who are new to training and new to the path of being Bodhisattvas, what we are learning how to practice is the 10 forms of fearlessness. For us, this is what the way of the Buddhas is. This is how it manifests itself. And what are the 10 forms of fearlessness? When you read the scripture, part one ends right there. That is the last sentence in part one. And then part two begins. And part two is entitled, On the Precepts. The 10 forms of fearlessness are the 10 precepts. And this is what we practice. Now, the first moment we set our feet upon the Buddha Way, until we become enlightened Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, then we will have been able to expand our understanding somewhat so that we can see some of these deeper truths that the Buddhas can see. But in the meantime, we don't have second best. We have the precepts. And the precepts are the 10 forms of fearlessness. They are how a Buddhist practices fearlessness in the world. How do you find fearlessness within yourself? And how do you offer it to others with faith and resolution? You do it by living by the precepts. There was the Buddha sitting in that grove saying, Yasa, here there is no confusion. There is no trouble. Why? Live by the precepts. That's why. And find that the confusion and the trouble and the suffering can become converted. It takes a lot of faith and courage to live by the precepts. And the first moment that you even hear about them or take them, whether it is the formal taking of the 10 great precepts or the 3 pure precepts, or just the desire to take refuge in the 3 treasures, that is the moment at which this faith and courage begin to build. This is what the Buddhas do on the grand scale. If you read through the scripture of Brahma's Net in part one, you will see that these attributes and these aspects of training for the Buddhas and for the Bodhisattvas all grow naturally out of the precepts. This is where the precepts start for us, and this is where the way of the Buddha opens. The keeping of the precepts, the practice and transmission of preceptual life, is, as I said, what the Buddhas do, and it's what we do. The Buddhist Sangha are those who are committed to living by the precepts. From this preceptual life, or put another way, from this commitment to preceptual life, this is where the fearlessness comes from. Because in this place, there is no fear. There is no confusion, and there is no trouble. And when we are faced, as we all are, with suffering, fear, confusion, and trouble, this is the place in which we take refuge. And in today's world, it seems that the ante for suffering, tragedy, fear, and distress seems to be raised at the moment. And as is the wonderful thing about Buddhism, which can be practiced anywhere, the opportunity for sitting still in this place of preceptual life is also being raised. So the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha itself, each of those three refuges, and what comes forth from them, the three pure precepts, the 10 great precepts, the practice of meditation, and doing this every day, as often, as much as you can. This is what grows fearlessness. This, the example of the Buddhas, this is the offering of their fearlessness to us. And in our own practice, as weak or as measly or as small or as inadequate it may be, nevertheless, if we keep to it and continue to make the sincere attempt to deepen it, this is the offering that we make to each other. And it is the offering that we make to everyone else in the world. O sentient beings, here there is no trouble. Here there is no confusion. Here there is no fear. As I originally mentioned to you when we were talking about the three kinds of offerings, there is the offering of material goods, there is the offering of fearlessness, and there is the third offering, which grows naturally out of material goods and fearlessness, which is the offering of the Dharma itself. And this is regarded, perhaps, as the supreme offering. There are four contemplations to make when we offer the Dharma. The first is the object of making the gift of the Dharma. The second is the intention of making the gift. The third is the nature of making the gift. And the fourth is the manner of making the gift. And it helps to keep these in mind when you, in whatever form you are appearing in at the moment, are either asked or called upon to make an offering of the Dharma. Sometimes people have told me, and I'm sure all of you, that one of the common ways of encountering the Dharma for the first time, and this was true of Shakyamuni Buddha himself, was seeing a monk, and how impressive that can be. This is why the sight of a monk or the presence of monastics is regarded as the fourth of the heavenly messengers. Aging, disease, death, and the sight of the renunciate. All of these sights telling us in different ways what we see here in front of us, this is not all. And everything that comes into this world and into life is subject to aging, disease, and death. And there is a way. The way of that, the way, is the training itself. It doesn't matter whether a person is a monk or a lay person. But regardless of how we appear, what we end up discovering and find that we are practicing are the 10 forms of fearlessness, the 10 precepts of object, intention, nature, and manner, because they help to support and explain and also, in one sense, a balance, in case one were to get carried away, and it is very easy to do so, the keeping of the eighth precept, not being mean in giving either dharma or wealth. Now, we've had quite a long morning, and I want to just very briefly introduce these four contemplations to you with a few explanatory points. And then the next time we meet, we will look at them in greater detail. The object of making the gift of the Dharma. The gift should be made to those who want, have respect for, and explain the Dharma. It may be a noble thing to stand in the midst of Grand Central Station reciting the Lotus Sutra to anyone who wishes to come by. But we have to ask ourselves, is that the best place for making an offering to the Dharma?
And how many people walking by really want to hear it? Well, there may be some, but perhaps not the vast majority. The intention of making the gift of the Dharma is to abjure evil intentions. And this takes into consideration explaining the Dharma with a mind that is free from material considerations such as wealth, fame, or worldly gain. And while that may seem to be obvious, when you begin to realize the subtleties of wealth, fame, and worldly gain that play on all of us, it's not as simple as it looks, and it is not as obvious as it sounds. Also, to rely on good intentions when making the gift of the Dharma, to do so out of compassion in order to end misery and suffering. This is something that one does out of compassion, in order that suffering may be cleansed and transformed. The nature of making the gift of the Dharma is to explain the Dharma in ways that the sense of the sutras and the Dharma is not lost and their meaning is not perverted. It is very easy for me, it would be very easy for me to sit here and give you my opinion about the teachings. Regardless of the fact that I have attempted to relinquish them for the past 30 years, it would appear that opinions still arise. And because Buddhism is the center of my life, part of the consequences of studying it is that I have many, many Buddhist opinions. They're all good. You know, at least I think so. But when I give a talk to you, I try to give you much more than my own opinion. Two ways of doing this, making this explanation, is to explain it logically in a way that makes sense to people. You may think of any of us who ascend the Dharma seat and begin to come out with, you know, statements which sound deeply profound and enigmatic, but it's not going to do you much good unless you understand what is being said in a way that is direct and clear for you. There is also the teaching in this, which is especially something for those of us who give Dharma talks, to make the disciple hold firmly to the principles of training therein. And this is what the Sangha does in a wise and kind
and compassionate way. It holds, it attempts to hold to the principles of training that are contained within the Buddha Dharma. And we try to hold ourselves and support each other in doing that as well. The manner of making the gift of the Dharma, not discussing it immediately when asked, which doesn't mean that one should be either coy or evasive. We had great training in this when we would accompany Reverend Master to doing talks and classes at UC and other places, because she would often turn to us and say, "Do any of you have anything to say about it?" And somehow she found a way to make us feel very uncomfortable if we jumped right in and said, "Oh yes, I have something that I'd love to say about that." Just as uncomfortable as if we stepped back and said, "You know, I don't know nothing. No, I couldn't possibly say anything about that." Well, we were being asked to say something. But we were also being asked to not just jump in with our own opinion, but to think carefully and then speak. And I'm not. I'm a monk. And also to examine the recipient. And I would take to examine the recipient as not too formal, but to determine whether or not the person who is asking really wants to hear what you have to say. Another thing that one must fully understand is discussing it when not asked. And what happens when we discuss it when it is not asked for? The teaching says that when we do so, when we intend to make an offering of the Dharma, we must do so in a clean and pleasing place, on a comfortable seat, after washing and purifying our clothes, and after washing and purifying our minds. And also after expounding various mantras and dharanis of purification. And this tells us that making the offering of the Dharma is something very important and can and should be done in a way that is very appropriate and helpful, and can also be done in ways that are not appropriate and not helpful, and to learn how to discern what and when those opportunities present themselves. And we will continue on with these four contemplations next time. Thank you for coming today very much.